This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Chacon Multimedia Studios just outside Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. A little late than normal than our normal release date, I know, but been busy with a lot of different things. Coming up this week on the program, Stephen Wilson was announced earlier this week as the sixth driver for Andretti Autosport for the Indianapolis 500. And man, been wanting to talk to him since we got this show started. I'm really happy to have him on. Tony DeZino joins us as our newest IndyCar analyst. Don't worry, Nick Yeoman's back at some point. We're still trying to figure that one out. Anyway, Tony will break down the Texas two-step at Texas Motor Speedway. Cameron Doss is on a hot streak in Euro Formula Open as he won the first three races at Portimao. And we wrap up the week's news once again. So follow us on Facebook or Twitter to tweet us at Inside Open Wheel. Call us on our voicemail, 815-714-9260. Leave us a question anytime you want, and maybe your question will be answered, or you can email us at any time, insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Now, we know almost everybody had an off week. We'll wrap up Mid-Ohio here in just a little bit for Formula Race Promotions as well. But starting next week, it's just going to get busier throughout the month of May, all due to everything going on at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Of course, FRP is at Barber with HSR on pole qualifying weekend. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel is the one, the only Stephen Wilson, as we talk about his new deal with Andretti Autosport for the Indianapolis 500.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
So about Monday afternoon, I get an email from Andretti Autosport. Hey, you want to interview our sixth driver that we're going to have for the 500? Can't say who it is yet, but we're going to do it. I spent enough time on online dating sites to know that this could lead to trouble, but, you know, against my better judgment, I'm like, sure, content is content. But nonetheless, early on Tuesday, our best guesses were confirmed. The sixth driver of the will be with Andretti Autosport for the Indianapolis 500 is none other than someone who I've known for, what? Has it been 12, 13 years now, Stephen?
It's got to be something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think 2009.
2009, yeah. Stephen Wilson joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Bud, I am so happy to see that you're back in a cockpit again. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's pretty exciting day. I'm just relieved and over the moon to get this announced. And really now we can start cracking on with the program and making this a really productive and competitive month of May.
And let's talk about that, how this came to be, because it's not just Andretti Autosport. It's another one of those Andretti Autosport partnerships.
Yeah, no. So this really came about, you know, about three months ago, maybe 4 months ago. I was out at a track day event in California at Thermal, and you know, was introduced to Don Cusick of Cusick Motorsports, and you know, just learning about him and his story, and his background, and you know, learning that how much of an IndyCar fan he really was, and you know, lifelong Indianapolis 500. You know, fan and a lot of passion for the sport. So, you know, from there, it really kind of took off from there. And, you know, our conversations, you know, escalated to him wanting to, you know, support me and support, put together a program to run the Indy 500 together. You know, so that's how it really began. And it was really neat because he's a shareholder in the company Lola Sport. It's a female owned company. And, you know, he decided that he wanted to use the program to support that company. It's about a year old company, so it's relatively new, and it's really great to be working with Lola Sport and helping them, you know, promote their brand on a world stage at this incredible event.
And you, as of now, are the 34th driver to throw your name into the ring for this year's 500. So I guess you can say you've kicked off a bump day this year.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. I thought it was already 34 entered. You know, I thought I was going to be the 35th or even the 36th.
Right.
So, you know, I think there could be up to 36. So we'll see what materializes here. Yeah, I think, you know, every driver in the field is probably going to be a bit concerned on qualifying weekend now. You know, it's hard to say and it's hard to say who's going to be the one that gets bumped. So, I think all we can really do is focus on what we can control and, try and put ourselves in the best position possible.
So this will be Cusick Motorsports' first foray into IndyCar racing. And, I'm on the website right now. I like, first of all, that you go on to Lola Sport, LOHLA sport.com, and the first pop-up you see is your car right there. So, okay, we're getting front and center.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's really neat to see how excited Lola Sport are about the program. Golfwear, an activewear company, and it's a unique partnership. But at the same time, I think it really there's a demographic that it can really fit with within the IndyCar community, and it's awesome to see a partner like that really get behind the program and promote it.
Now, it's been a while since you've been behind an IndyCar. Let's talk about where you've been since you last led laps at the famed Brickyard.
Yeah, no, it's been a long time coming to make that return. 2018 was an incredible month for us, a lot of personal growth that month, and just a lot of experience gained. And from there, I tried to make the 2019. We had a lot of things going right for us. We thought that 2019 we were going to be back in the car, and unfortunately, things didn't work out late in the day. A partner pulled out, and that was it. And then 2020 rolls around, the whole pandemic and everything, and I was trying to put something together there, didn't work out, and it was pretty difficult to keep coming back and keep getting up off the mat and keep pushing on. It took a lot of grit and determination, but we finally have got it back here. So the goal is to have a successful month and hopefully be less than 2 years to make my return if it all goes well. In the meantime, I've been spending most of my time coaching in various series, particularly the Ferrari Challenge series, and then today I've got to pay my bills.
We'll talk a little bit about that in just a couple of seconds. Stephen Wilson joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. He will be the sixth driver in Andretti Autosport to run the 500 alongside Cusick Racing, right? Yes. Cusick Motorsports. Sorry, I knew I was right the first time. But let's talk about the changes that have come to IndyCar since you've been in the car. Basically, this is the first time that you're running with the windshield, correct?
Yeah, the aero screen, it's the first time I'll be running with that, and that's definitely going to be a bit different than usual and something to adapt to, but really not sure how long it'll really take me to get adapted. I hopefully not long at all.
Well, of course, also it helps that Andretti Autosport just kind of figured out a way to get cool suits, so it shouldn't be too hard depending on how hot it is.
Yeah, I don't think we'll actually end up using a cool suit at Indy because, you're trying to keep the car as light as possible, and I'm not sure we necessarily need it. Mm-hmm. So on the oval, you get a good amount of airflow through that, into the cockpit. It'd be nice to have it. So if they offer it, I'll definitely be wearing it for sure.
So any chance, either this season or next season, that we'll see you behind the wheel at a different track that's not Indianapolis?
It's definitely possible. I think it kind of right now, I think the main focus is just making sure Indy goes well and this next month goes well. If that happens, then that's everything I can do in my control to make that happen. And from there, we'll see. I think there's a desire on a couple of the partners that are involved this year that they want to do more in the series. They want to do more races. But I think let's just focus on what we have right now, make this a really amazing month. And then beyond that, we can decide that we can figure that out.
All right. On to Ferrari Challenge real quick. I know this is an open wheel show, but I know some people in Ferrari Challenge. So this is kind of, this is how I'm aware of, what goes on. So for those who aren't aware, talk to us about how you get paired up with a team or a driver in Ferrari Challenge, because there's a lot of pro drivers or former pro drivers who coach different teams?
Yeah, no. So, you know, the Ferrari Challenge series is somewhere where a lot of pro drivers go to. You know, it's an opportunity to pass on a lot of the knowledge that we've gained over the years of experience in the sport, and you know, help other drivers become better, become more competent race car drivers. So yeah, that's something that I'm involved with and been fortunate to be involved with that for a couple of years now.
And so, it also gives you a chance to get behind the wheel too, because I think you get to run a little bit of a practice session to at least get the car shook down, correct?
Yeah. No, typically we start the weekend and we shake the car down, make sure there's no issues there, make sure to check the balance, maybe make some changes to make sure that you can provide a car to the your driver that you're coaching, that provide that a well balanced car. So you know, involves a little bit of track time, which helps me stay a little bit sharp. But you know, it's nice because it's a commitment that allows me to still focus a lot of attention and a lot of my focus on getting back to Indy and racing at the Indy 500.
Now, have you found out who who's going to be behind the wall, who's going to be up in turn one, turn three to spot for you this month yet?
I haven't found out all the details, but I know that the team or the 25 team is going to be built up with a lot of familiar faces from 2018. So, you know, my engineer, Doug Zister, he's going to be back working with me, and I'm really excited to continue that relationship and kind of continue from where we left off in 2018. So that's a benefit there of being able to come back to a team that you've already raced with.
Yeah, no, that's huge, especially because it seems like now we're seeing the loyalty with, you know, Michael Andretti, you know, bringing back James Hinchcliffe, signing the Weldon brothers to development contracts. You know, we're seeing them bring you back. So there seems to be an air Andretti Autosport of keeping the continuity, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a team that I feel, you know, very familiar with. You know, racing Indy Lights in 2011 with them, you know, winning races in Indy Lights with them, and now, and then most recently the 2018 Indy 500. So a lot of familiarity there, and you know, it's kind of every year, it's kind of the first call I make is to Andretti Autosport to see what kind of situation they're in and see if there's a way to work with them.
No, it's huge. Dude, I'm so happy for you. When I heard the news Tuesday morning, it brought a big smile to my face, because, you know, I've known you, I've known your brother, and it's great to see you back behind the wheel with a competitive team. Stefan, other than Twitter and Facebook, any other way we can find out how you're going to do throughout the month of May?
You know, obviously Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, those are the free most available channels. Outside of that, the website, stephanwilson.com, and even the Lola Sport website, there's going to be a good amount of content that's going to be shared there. So yeah, no, thank you for having me on, and thanks to everyone that's following.
We'll chat down the road. Stephan Wilson, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch up with you sometime after the month of May so we can get you ready.
Thanks, Jeremy. Yeah, great to be on. I'm excited for the month of May. Thank you.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Tony DeZino joins us. We're going to be breaking down the Texas two-step with Charlie next. When getting the real story in the road to Indy or IndyCar paddocks, more people trust Trackside Online, presented by Honda Racing, than any other site. With the top stories, race previews, and features you won't get anywhere else, it's the place to get news for IndyCar fans like yourself. Just $22 gets you insight and analysis from some of the best writers in the series. Visit TracksideOnline.com today for your subscription. That's TracksideOnline.com.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, it's time to wrap up the Texas two-step here on Inside Open Wheel. Jeremy Scott, Charlie Ante joins us, and we have a new analyst. I don't have a rookie hazing for this analyst, because really, as I told him in a message, it's your return to Inside Group.
Okay, Inside Open Wheel. Yes, I know I need to get more creative with these names, but nonetheless, we welcome Tony DeZino to the show. Tony will be sharing the duties as our IndyCar analyst between he and Nick Yeoman. Nick has some prior commitments throughout the season, and from what I hear, there's some exciting things on the horizon. So, Tony, welcome back to this third iteration of whatever show I'm doing.
Jeremy, Charlie, it's like putting on, it's like getting back on the bike. You move back to the Midwest to be able to talk again, and it's great to be back with you guys, so thanks for having me on.
So let's talk about real quick before we get into Texas two-step, because really the first race we don't need to cover that much. Talk to us a little bit about what you've been doing and where you're at now.
It's been a while, but most recently I was at an agency outside of Greenville, South Carolina, primarily working with a certain tire manufacturer within IMSA that may have been French. They may or may not have a nickname of the Bendem / Michelin Man for that. So I was their lead social PR rep for the IMSA series on that. But prior to that, I'd been with NBC Sports, primarily IndyCar lead for their web coverage for digital. So kind of bounced around, working on a few new projects and a few new kind of ideas, and back in the homeland. So the sports car stint comes after a little more than 3 years, so three and a half years in that most recent run.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and this is you have two-thirds NBC Sports alum here in today's edition. And yeah, it's great to have you back. I'm excited to have another wealth of knowledge here in this in my roster, as I always say. We're lucky enough to have Parker Thompson this year. You're on, so it's going to be fun to see what happens throughout the season.
I think so. Parker's off to, man, he's coming off a great weekend himself. I don't know if we're going to touch on that, but
we'll touch on that later in News and Notes, because we're going to have you on, because I think that you know how we play with News and Notes. So, All right, Texas two-step, race one, the Genesis 300, Scott Dixon dominant, done, whatever, a couple crashes.
Next.
The second race, the Expel 375, I think that is where the action was. And Charlie, I want to get your analysis on that start incident coming off of turn four. As we know, there was a huge incident. Connor Daly became the first driver to start a race upside down in open wheel series history. And there were some things said on pit road, both on IndyCar Radio and NBCSN, where drivers were upset that they didn't have the qualifying or any practice beforehand. Now, I could see the practice situation, but when you're doing a doubleheader, maybe it's because I've been doing these support series circles for years. I'm so used to qualifying for race one and taking the time from race two qualifying in race one.
Yeah, so like in the FRP series, we would take the fastest lap from the previous race and use that to set the grid for the next race. I mean, it's not really a new problem to have this, to have qualifying rained out on an oval. So it doesn't seem like it should be that big of a deal. I think it's been a while since I've seen the replay, but I think basically what happened is that the field for some reason got checked up and all hell broke loose after that. Kind of like what happened at Gateway last year.
Oh, yeah. That was another thing that was brought up. Poor Alexander Rossi, Tony, got caught up in both that crash and the Gateway crash.
He is, at least, and this time he didn't have James Hinchcliffe to interview him in the moment in the pit.
That's right,
road afterwards. This time he just had a podcast, of which we shall not discuss, a different one to go over.
Actually, we can discuss that, because we are actually trying to do a collaboration with Off Track as well.
Oh, good.
Yes, because we had Hinch on, and I said, hey, let's do a collab. And he goes, yeah, it's a great idea. So.
Well, that's good. Yeah, no, and in this instance, and you look at kind of where Texas starts. So you obviously have the dog leg, and you're not even forming up till midway down the back straight there, mile and a half. So you're probably not at full speed as you're going through three and four. You're bunched up further, and it's not nearly as spread out as it needs to be for the speed differential. So when poor Connor tried to thread the needle and make it through the gap, the gap just completely closed up on him. He had nowhere to go, and he just got completely taken out through those other two cars that ran into him.
And I think that's what he said to IndyCar Radio's Jake Query, is that he tried to follow Hinch and just, Dalton Kell had nowhere to go, so, that's where they made contact. Here we go. Nathan Brown of the Indianapolis Star tweeted, basically it's a rule book call because of how to qualify for doubleheaders, they use that two-lap session. So since that was rained out,
they obviously canceled both sessions because you used lap one for race one, lap two for race two. I think that's a fantastic idea for ovals, but I'm wondering if there needs to be something in the rule book that states if qualifying for doubleheader ovals is rained out, you just take, you know, your pole time per se out of your fastest time for race one. Therefore, not only do you prevent races like we have with the Genesis 300, where it just becomes, you know, a snooze fest, and you actually make it a little bit more exciting because now you're going to have guys strategizing during their long runs for those fast laps, Tony.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, you look at the rule book, and this was something that you've never been in the situation before where it's been an oval rain out for a second race, and there are multiple options that you could factor into consideration. I would like to see that considered in the off season. I don't think it makes sense to change rules during the weekend if you can avoid it, since that was kind of on the books. But that being said, now if they're going to continue with a two at Texas or two at another oval, if it becomes an oval shortage where you have to keep running two at ovals, I think that's something that you look at after we're through the end of this season.
Now we know why Tony's no longer with IMSA, because that's a non-Bo Barfield comment. Charlie, one of the things that also was proposed is that these drivers come to the line at a prescribed distance between the rows. I know that a lot of racing series, they say, you know, keep a healthy gap, but they don't say how big of a gap. And I fail to see why that would be a good idea, because you could even have something like that when you have guys 50 feet apart from each other in rows.
Yeah, I think before I touch on that, I think I would call into question this entire idea that the starting order was the problem, because they really weren't even up to speed. They weren't even close to getting up to speed. So having, you know, faster cars in the front or in the back or whatever doesn't really make a difference, because they weren't, at that certain speed, they can all go that speed easily. So it was, I think, a question of just mistiming and misjudgment. The changing the gap between the cars, I think, is probably more towards the right direction. But you make a good point. That's also really hard to enforce. I think that I read a comment that suggested that they increase the speed at which they come to the line, which might be an even better idea, so that they, you know, snapping on the throttle is less, I guess it's less reactive. The acceleration is less abrupt. So if you mistime it and you go too early, you don't have to snap off of it as drastically. So that might be sort of starting to get in the right direction.
Or we just have willpower not up, be on the front row. Oh, wait, never mind. Scott Dixon was on the front row.
Yeah, or you could just, you know, tell the drivers not to screw up.
Come on.
Charlie. Elio has entered the chat.
Yeah. As I say, Charlie, you should know what happens when the helmet goes on. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess.
And you were going to make another point as well, Charlie.
I don't think so.
All right, good enough. All right, so once the green flag dropped, and I'm not even going to count that first green flag as the green flag. That was just an extension of yellows that they just counted laps for. That's when we saw Scott Dixon go back out front, and we thought, oh, crap, it's another one of those races where Scott Dixon's going to lead, ho-hum, blah, blah, blah. And then I can't remember what happened during the let's see here. Go back to the notes provided to us by Trackside Online. And then we had, you know, the restart. Let's see, the next yellow. Because it was a long green flag. I think, Tony, remind me, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was at least one green flag pit stop in that run.
I think within the first stint there was, it felt like it was at least to the halfway point. And the other thing that was different between the two races was different race lengths. So when that long caution happened, it took the four-stop window out of play that was anticipated for the second race and moved it down to a three-stop window. So you already had people talking fuel numbers, which I was like, oh, great. So now the one thing that differentiates the two races is taken out of play. So I don't think it was until Harvey's wheel issue was the, I think, the next issue.
And that was interesting because we saw the same thing happen to Colton Herta in the 300, and now we're seeing it rear its ugly head in the 375. So now we're starting to think, okay, is this an Andretti Autosport problem?
Wouldn't shock me. I mean, that is unfortunate because that's a team that it's Andretti affiliated, but it's not necessarily Andretti set up kind of thing, even though there's a data share point, and Jack Harvey has talked about this. Meyer Shank is very much its own entity and their own prep, and they've been clearly outperforming most of the Andretti Autosport team through the first few races of the season, Colton one or two races aside.
And you and I have seen over the years how well Mike Shank preps those cars. It doesn't matter what he's run. If he's run prototypes, he's run GT cars, the man knows his stuff. So this is not too surprising for some of us who've known Mike for over 15 years.
Not at all. And I think what's really cool is they're hitting their stride because there's consistency here. They're not, you know, part-time effort anymore. They were slow build, 3 races, 6 races, 10 races. Now they're in their second year of a full-time season, and really their first normal full-time season, I guess, because since you've had, you know, the truncated summer start at Texas last year. I mean, you look at where that team was at Texas 2020 and where they were at Texas 21. It's night and day difference. I mean, that's so impressive to see where they were, which is why it was so unfortunate when the brake rotor had its issue during that. Charlie, I'd be interested to pick your brain on this. When you see something like that on the right rear, especially when it's two team cars, where does kind of it go from where your head thinks of, okay, this happened yesterday and now it's happening on my car?
I mean, if I can think of way back when I was driving at that level, I don't really think you think about it. You kind of just, you have a job to do. You're focused on that. If the right rear goes, it goes. And that's really, it's not my problem as the driver. I mean, it's your problem when you're slamming into the wall, but until then, it's all theoretical.
So you know, when all these announcers are saying, oh, the driver's thinking about this, it's more the engineer that's sitting there thinking, okay, this happened to, I'm going to use Kevin LaCroix's name, you know, it happened to Kevin's car, you know, is this going to happen to Charlie's car?
Yeah, I don't think that I really would have thought about it at the time. I'm focused on my job and trying to drive as best I can. And once you put the helmet on and you get in the car, you sort of, that stuff is fate. It's not my problem. If it happens, it happens. But it's not something I think about.
I'll say this, after that restart, Tony, it seemed like a totally different race because you had Award getting racy. You had Ray Hall getting racy. Finally, because we know how good Graham is at Texas. A lot of the front runners, all of a sudden, it was like they found that second groove that's between the first groove and the PJ1.
Yeah, the mythical second groove finally somewhat rubbered in, I think, but enough to where you could take chances if you were brave enough, if you're hard enough setup. I mean, this is the challenge with this Universal Aero kit is there's not much wiggle room on the downforce levels there. It's pretty much one setting, and it was a little hotter. It was during the day too, so it's a little slicker at that point. When Pato was, you know, going on Will, the Pato and Will dice was awesome.
Yeah,
I mean that was great. And then Graham, I think it's a shame that some of his timing's been off because he's been really solid there. I mean, this is what he didn't get to do last year when they had an electrical issue prior to the race start, and he was one of several guys that didn't even get to take the green flag.
Another yell came out when Rosenqvist lost his wheel, so a rare misstep by Team McLaren. And that's when we see, after the restart, Pato O'Ward just gets so close. And, of course, I was expecting also, Tony, during that stint of Newgarden and O'Ward being a little bit more racier than what we saw.
Joseph is now in a couple races this year, not been as combative or as aggressive as I have seen him in the past, and I think that's a strategic move on his part because he's digging out of a points hole at Barber from that first lap incident there. I did some research earlier this week. Right now, Scott Dixon's worst finish in the field is 5th in 4 races. Ooh. Every other driver's worst finish is 12th or worse. So if you want to talk about where the points are at right now, that's why. And Joseph can't really afford a second mulligan. So I'm thinking, what's a mulligan for Dixon, like 8th?
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
O'Ward, Newgarden, and Ray Hall make up the podium. Let's take a look at the driver of the 48 car, Tony Kanaan. 2 laps down. Oh, maybe he should retire. No. Scott Dixon, 4th. Colton Herta, 5th. Simon Pagenaud. New Dan, by the way. He finishes 6th.
Go ahead. To be fair on that point, it's a lot easier to finish 2 laps down on an oval than it is on a road course.
and when your car is carving through the carnage of the start because your car is starting so back from the entry points because there was no qualifying.
Yep.
It all comes full circle on an oval.
Alex Palou 7th, Scott McLaughlin 8th, Renus VK 9th, Ryan Hunter Ray 10th. By the way, I've got to say this. Huge kudos to Scott McLaughlin, finished 2nd on his first ever old oval. Tony, you can almost say he gave it some jandle. I've been waiting to break that out.
I'm equally terrified and impressed that I knew that was coming. But yeah, good on him for that, man.
Oh, I'm
and
so
just
happy
his
for him.
His attitude, his demeanor post race, his fun loving vibe. I did not expect him to be on the podium at Texas for all places. And of course, my one of my favorite oval stats is if you get on a podium on an oval, but you don't actually have a podium ceremony, which obviously you finish top three at Indy, your top three at Texas, you're not standing anywhere. So first top three finish, but not his first time actually standing on the podium. So that will come sooner rather than later.
All right, Tony, we're going to have you hang around because you know what happens during News and Notes. We've done this before, so we'll stick around for just a little bit. Coming up next, I sit down with the latest superstar overseas, winning all three of the first races in the Euro Formula Open Championship at Portimao. It's Cameron Das, next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, he's already making a name for himself in Europe, swept the first three races of the Euro Formula Open Championship with Team Motopark. We're talking about Cameron Das. Cameron, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule, and congratulations on your sweep.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm really happy to be on the show.
It's great to see that, you know, we have somebody representing us in front of the F1 crowd. We know that... I've got to say, I love the track of Portugal because it's so flowy. Let's talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into your wins over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, Portimao, it was actually my first time there this past weekend, and it was just an amazing track. I mean, it actually reminded me a lot of Barber in Alabama because you have those flowing undulations, and it's an experience that you don't get at a lot of tracks. So I was really, really happy with that place.
And what I think's neat is you're coming off the final turn and you go up almost, you know, on the pit straight. It's almost like a table, and then you fall back down, which the whole concept, and you know, growing up watching tracks get tilk-ized, I think that I wish the Portimao would be a permanent place on the schedule, because I think, you know, not just for Formula One, but I think across the board it promotes great racing.
Yeah, I was actually surprised. I mean, I saw a lot of high speed flowing corners and thought, oh, this is going to be tough for racing, but that was not the case at all. I mean, as I'm sure we'll get into it, but in race two, it wasn't really that bad with the aero wash, and there's plenty of overtakes going throughout the entire field, so couldn't be happier with that track.
Let's talk about that. Yeah, you obviously won the first three races of the season. Now let's talk about the format, because it almost reminds me of a USF4 triple header format where you have two races one day and then, you know, the feature race per se on Sunday.
Yeah, it's totally different this year. I was a bit apprehensive at first because I saw a reverse grid and thought, oh God, here we go. I've had to deal with those in the past, and they're hit or miss really. But so the new format is we have one qualifying on Saturday and then two races, the first of which is based off of qualifying like any normal race. And then the second race is the reverse top six of the first race finishing order. And then you go into the third race, which is based off of fastest lap from race two. So it adds a whole new strategic element to the second race that we didn't have before.
That's interesting. I kind of like that. It makes things a little bit more spicy and, you know, it gives you guys a chance to actually get out there and stretch your legs and show what you can do.
For sure, yeah. I mean, and it's also worth full points, that reverse grid race. So it's not like you could be in sixth and be happy with sixth and then just, you know, stay there. It's like, oh, you know what? I can actually get a full race win points out of this. So, it definitely added a new strategy element that was pretty interesting to watch.
And, you know, here's what's interesting. So you have two teammates. One of them couldn't race, and it's the fellow American Jack Crawford, because he was under 16, and it's interesting to see that rule be placed in a development series.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the standard rule in Europe is 16 for racing above the F4 level. But yeah, I mean, I would have thought an exception would have been made for him. I'm not sure what the actual reason behind that was, but we were all really gutted that he wasn't actually going to be racing on Saturday or Sunday.
But regardless,
on Friday or Saturday.
But regardless, he still have a stacked team, you know. So that's, I mean, it's a stacked field regardless. And here's what I find interesting for a support series in Europe or a support series in general. There's two different engine manufacturers. You had the Volkswagen Power, and then the other half of the field runs Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah, that's not a common thing anymore. And what's even what's even more impressive is that the engines are actually very, very equal. I believe the Volkswagen revs a little bit higher and has slightly different characteristic, which is like a tiny bit of an advantage in some tracks. And then the Mercedes is a bit torquier, low down. So, but the lap time is basically net equal. So wow. It's really, really impressive on both fronts, on both sides of the engine manufacturer field.
And it's a this season, at least, it's a very interesting lineup of races. So your next round's at Paul Ricard, then you go to Spa in June, Hungaroring in July. Also, you have Autodromo, Enzo and Dino Ferrari, so Monza. Red Bull, Monza, then, you know, Circuit Catalunya. So an interesting mix of tracks within the Euro Formula schedule.
Yeah, they're all F1 circuits, and you really can't complain about the calendar. I mean, there's not a bad track on that list.
That's the voice of Cameron Das. He is he won the first full weekend of Euro Formula racing overseas. Inside Open Wheel is on right now, and I've got to say, you have a pretty interesting mix of racing these past couple seasons. Last year, you were with Carlin Buzz Racing for the FIA F3 Championship. You also ran in the Euro Formula Open Championship with Team Motopark. What is it about Team Motopark that, you know, it seems like you're familiar with them? So what I'm trying to say is, what made you come back to Team Motopark for the season?
So Motopark is really one of these very rare teams. And, you know, everyone in the motorsport industry is incredibly hardworking. But Motopark is just on this level that I hadn't experienced yet at the junior Formula level. I mean, I expect this at maybe Formula One and IndyCar level, but like, these guys really, really know what they're doing. And it's not just a normal racing team where you show up, you drive, it's the race weekend, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And the results are the results. It's actually, I mean, they are called Motopark Academy, and it's called Academy for a reason. I mean, we spend a lot of time with the team, going through sim work, going through pre-event. I'd say the amount of time actually spent in communication with the teams at least double what a standard race team goes through. So I've just learned so much from them. And I knew I needed at least another year to pick their brains, basically.
And let's talk about that as well, because you take a look at their roster. You know, yeah, you run you're in Euro Formula Open, but they also have teams in Super Formula and Super Formula Light. So there's a chance you could go race in Japan.
Absolutely, that's an option. But for me, the goal right now is Formula One.
Yeah. And you're talking about Formula One. You know, I think this is the first time in years that we have a bunch of great American talent that, you know, in 3 or 4 years could be set to be in a Formula One seat. You know, you have yourself, Juan Correa. You have Jack Crawford, Kalen Frederick, and Bryce Aaron all over across the pond trying to get into a seat for the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, I think it's never been a better time to be an American trying to get into Formula One. I mean, obviously Haas is an American team that's in Formula One now. And also I think, especially with Drive to Survive being so popular in the States, Formula One's really having this up and coming moment in America, and it's still relatively untapped, but I think it's a great time to be in the sport.
Well, it also doesn't hurt that an American owns McLaren either, so there's that.
That also helps.
Well, you got that. You have Carlin here in the United States running IndyCar and Indy Lights. And of course, you know, it seems like anytime any young driver wins in IndyCar, oh, they're the next F1, you know, they're the next F1 star. So I think for you, it's like, okay, yeah, that's great, but I'm over here too.
Yeah, I mean, all I can do is focus on myself and putting in the results as much as possible. I think I've had a little bit of a different background to a lot of other drivers. I only got started racing in, I'd say, 2015. I started indoor electric karting. And then very quickly went into the F4 US Championship in 2016. So for me, I didn't have that, like, you know, that karting background from like age 5 or 6 years old. So it's all about, you know, getting as many laps as possible in a race car, getting that racecraft experience and making that second nature, which I think it finally has clicked for me. And, you know, that's the path I'm on. I'm just, you know, focusing on myself and, you know, I'll be rewarded for that eventually when the time comes.
2016, a US F4 champion, the first champion after Formula Lights folded. And then you ran both US F2000 and Formula 4 that year. But most of your experience has been overseas. If you don't, say, for example, you don't make it to F1, because we all know how tough that is, but the way you guys are running, I can't see why one of you wouldn't make it to F1. Is IndyCar an option?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did do a few races in USF 2000 in 2016 as well. And so I had the chance to explore the IndyCar paddock. The racing's incredible in IndyCar. And the competitive level is, you know, just as good as Formula One. So it's totally an option. But for me, ever since I started, the goal was Formula One. And, you know, being in Europe is what you really have to do to get there. I mean, there's just so much, you know, technically that you need to learn that is a bit different than the U.S. Mm-hmm. So, that's the main focus for now.
Okay, so what's the main difference between the U.S. racecraft and the European racecraft? We hear a lot about it. But in your own terms, what do you see as the big difference since you've had that experience in racing both?
In terms of racecraft, I'd say it all stems from a rule, which in the U.S. you can't defend in reaction to the driver behind you. You have to be proactive with that move, otherwise it's considered blocking. Whereas in Europe, you actually get you can proactively defend, and you're allowed two moves instead of one. So that just totally changes the way you're able to defend. And I'd say also you get those two moves, but you're really kind of allowed in three. So you end up getting a more aggressive racing style, but that it really stems from the rule more than anything. I mean, the drivers are just as aggressive in the US. It's just, what are they allowed to get away with, basically?
Exactly. That's what I was saying. Is it more of a respect factor in Europe where they know, okay, he's got two moves, quote unquote, but, you know, because, you know, the reason why I've heard, oh, here in America, you only get one move is because they're worried about touching wheels.
Yeah, I think the rule is it has to do with safety, but I would say it's very rare that we've had an issue in Europe or somewhat. I mean, I think everyone practices it so often because we're overtaking each other. And once you're used to the rule, everyone knows the gaps, know when you need to pull out at the right time. And so we haven't had many issues with that, but I mean, it's racing, so, you know, stuff like that happens.
Yeah, exactly. Well, nonetheless, the schedule looks great. You got off to a great start. Really excited to see what happens. Now, do you know that if these races are going to be replayed in the States, like on Motor Trend or something like that?
The Euroformula races, as far as I know, they're only being broadcasted on YouTube.
Okay.
And they're always live. You have the qualifying's broadcasted live as well, and the races are, you know, available to watch after the fact as well on Euroformula Open's YouTube channel.
See regional series, take note. You should be on YouTube or something easily accessible. All right, where else can people follow your success and throughout your racing career so far?
I'd say the best place to follow me is Instagram. My name's just Cameron Doss on there. And I also try and upload YouTube videos as often as I can. I'm actually working on one right now, just recapping the weekend and kind of going through my thought processes and different, you know, overtaking scenarios and that kind of thing. So, I'd say those are the best two places to follow me.
Fantastic. Cameron Doss, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Charlie and I do our usual What's on Our Minds next.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
This This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
All right, it's time for news and notes here on Inside Open Wheel. Excited to bring on Tony DeZino with this segment. It's one of my favorite segments. Charlie, I know it's yours. By the way, Tony, I've got to say, I'm so happy for Stefan Wilson getting the Andretti Autosport ride. And I got to go back to the interview. He said, off the interview, he said, you know, I just decided to sit on the beach for a couple of years after leading a couple laps near the end of the 500 and thought maybe now's the time to come back.
Oh, that's great. I actually texted with him earlier this week, offering a bit of congratulatory message. And, usually you hear an Andretti sixth car a while ago, but it's rare that it's this late to the race, yeah, or this close to the race that it gets confirmed. So, you knew it had to be someone with experience the closer it gets. And I think he's more ready for this opportunity, whereas in 2018, he didn't really have a proper shot in 2016. Now he's got team familiarity. He'll have the same engineer. And obviously, he's just a guy we're all rooting for. So good on him for that.
Yeah, not to mention, it's most of the team that was with him in 2018. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in the top 10 for the 500. But what's going to be interesting is who's going to be on the outside looking in come bump day.
That's a tough question. Yeah. I think we're either 35 or 36, depending on the last two to be announced. And we may have seen this. RC Enerson and Top Gun Racing are expected to have a shakedown run next week or early part of May at Gateway to get their first running. We also don't know what the third Dale Coyne with Rick Ware Racing entry will shake out. The driver has not been officially named. It is very on brand for that team to keep a TBA. And the other question is where Chevrolet and Honda are with their respective engine maps. It was a big Honda year last year. Given how tight this field is, you might have 2 to 3 tenths of a mile an hour trying to make it. So, I mean, even though there's four or five you could pick off the top, there's probably a surprise in there.
I say, Charlie, it's great to see that TBA finally got a chance to put their name in the hat for the 500 this year.
Yeah, they're always the dark horse.
I need to run down to Coin sometime this week before they head out to Indy and see what's going to happen so I can finally meet this elusive TBA. Some interesting news coming out of Road America I want to touch on real quick. As we know, we do cover F4 and FRA. Been told by a couple of very reliable sources that they will not have any coverage for the F4 and FRA races at Road America. And this is a touchy situation because, as we know, next weekend is the Indy GP. So a lot of the drivers in F4 and FRA and a lot of the crew members do double duty. So we'll see them start the weekend at Indy. They'll move over to Road America afterwards. The races are Sunday and Monday, which is very, strange for a support series to run on a Monday. The support series, it's not Trans Am or, Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge. But, Charlie, I want to get your thoughts on it. I know that you've run Fridays through Sundays. So you're a competitor in F4 and FRA. How would you feel knowing that not only your first race is at 5 p.m. on Sunday and you got to run early Monday morning?
I think being last off on being last of the day and then first of the next day, honestly, it's really not as rough as kind of the inverse where you're the first at the start of the day and then you don't have any track time until the very end of the day. So you have your qualifying session at like 8 a.m. or 8:30 a.m. and then you have nothing all day until your race at 5 p.m. That's the worst. But having it kind of the other way around, I think it's probably worse for the crew members because if there's a problem with the car at the end of the day on Sunday, then you have to be up all night to fix it. But I think from a driver's perspective, it's not so bad.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We'll try and cover it the best we can, but it's sad because you see some of the best racing is in those Luke Junior Formula Series, and I'm a little upset, but it'll be interesting to see if anything happens if somebody else steps
especially
up,
especially at Road America.
Oh yeah,
such a great racetrack.
Oh yeah, and it's the first time that the F4 and FRA drivers are going to be racing there. We'll see what happens, and we'll see if I get yelled at, which chances are I probably will. It's not the first time, won't be the last. All right, Tony, I want to get your thoughts on the road to Indy this year. We've seen
USF 2000, Indy Pro 2000, it's a wide open field, in my opinion. Indy Lights is just going to be between two drivers, as it was in FR Americas last year.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Trackside Online earlier, because I actually helped them out with TSO Ladder for the Road to Indy coverage presented by Cooper Tires at St. Pete, remote coverage. But anyway, that all three series, Indy Lights, Indy Pro 2000 in particular, and USF 2000 are stacked. Yeah. Indy Lights, everyone I think was kind of expecting a Kirkwood runaway, then GMG, HMD had a pair of wins at Barber. Same script here at St. Pete. Kyle Kirkwood back on form, and it felt normal to be riding Kyle Kirkwood wins yet another open wheel race. I don't know if that's probably he is to junior open wheel racing what Scott Dixon is to IndyCar at the moment. If he's not winning, something's wrong. But that being said, I was super impressed in race two by David Malukas. That guy's race defense and his race improvement and racecraft has grown by leaps and bounds from fast but erratic, and I would say kind of inconsistent prior to this. I think he could be a championship contender if he strings a couple more weekends. And then Indy Pro between Braden Eaves, Christian Rasmussen, poor Hunter McElroy, who had a mechanical late that kind of derailed the win there, four or five others. Junkos has a couple good guys. It's crazy to see how deep that is.
Well, Tony, you and I talked about this off the air, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, and I attributed Malukas's racecraft getting better that whole last season in FR Americas because of his now teammate. You know, they were chasing each other all season long. You had a driver who came in thinking, okay, you know, look at the talent field, I might be able to win this championship. And then coming into the field, oh, I'm going to have to beat him.
He's race sharp, and he's one of few veterans that have more time in that car, too. I mean, there's only two or three guys that are in their second or third year. I think him, Robert McGinnis, which it's always funny to say Malukas McGinnis, Malukas. It's kind of potato tomato. One other shout out, Exclusive Autosport won three races during St. Pete as well. Christian Brooks swept the weekend in USF 2000, and then Eaves got his first win in Indy Pro, or second. I don't know, but whatever.
I can't wait for Exclusive to come to Indy Lights next year. That's going to be a lot of fun.
After I think they were planning to in 2020, and then nothing happened in 2020. So, but that them having a showcase would be an even better set for them for 2022.
And we can't go throughout this episode without being remiss of the passing of three-time Indianapolis 500 champion Bobby Unser. We were supposed to have our start of our month of May spectacular with Paul Dalby, Field of 33.com, scheduling conflicts kind of got in the way, mostly on my end. But Charlie, I've got to say this. It kind of came as a shock to hear that Bobby Unser passed away, because we didn't know that he was dealing with, you know, illness. And I think that's how he wanted it to be that way. And you know what? Kudos to him for not wanting to come public and say, hey, you know, this might be it.
Yeah, I wasn't super, super surprised. I mean, he was, what, 87 years old?
Yeah.
I remember last time I heard from him was on the Dinner with Racers podcast. Mm-hmm. And honestly, he sounded a bit frail there. Sharp as ever in the mind, but something about the stories that he told about, you know, I think he's told a story about how he broke his arm or his leg or something. And I was like, yeah, it sounds like he's kind of getting a bit frail.
I'm really thankful that a few years ago, and this was the last Indy 500 I covered in 2018, Steve Shunk organized the roast, the legendary roast of Bobby Unser. And you have Parnelli Jones, Johnny Rutherford, Roger Penske, Rick Mears, Robin Miller, all up on the stage, just letting loose. I mean, Penske not in starch, wearing a Bobby Unser t-shirt with blue underneath. That alone was worth the price. And just to be able to kind of serenade and bring those memories. I mean, I think we're all kind of the age where, even though we're younger, we appreciate the history. And there's no one who's was a better storyteller, and really such a diverse resume from his open wheel, his Pikes Peak experience than Uncle Bobby.
I've got to say that that episode kind of got me in trouble, because I started listening to it on I took my wife out to Vegas for her 30th birthday, and I'm like,
uh-oh.
I'm like, Ryan just dropped a new podcast. Okay, I can do that. So I listened to it, and she gave me like a really nasty look one of the times, and I sent a picture to Ryan. I go, you got me in trouble, jerk. Thanks. But yeah, if you haven't listened to the Dinner with Race, go. Sorry.
Sorry. I think you cut out for a good like 5 seconds there.
Oh, I was gonna say I got in trouble for listening to Dinner with Racers with Bobby Unser. If you haven't listened to it, go to our Twitter site at Inside Open Wheel. We have two links to part one and part two. They're very good. Very good. And there's also animations to go along with it. All right, Charlie. So month of May is coming up. What can we look forward to you from?
I meant
Tony. I'm sorry, Tony. What can we look forward to see? Where can we look forward to seeing your work?
TBD, to be honest. There's a couple projects. I might have some more TSO appearances in the month. I'm not sure. They're still sorting a few things. At the very least, I will be offering my completely unsolicited opinions back on Twitter. So that's been fun to re-engage that at a much higher level than previously when I was in the sports car PR role. And I think just May in general, the Indy GP, that's always kind of the bizarro race. It's usually Willpower, Simon that wins. There's usually a goofy grid. There's two or three surprise qualifying efforts. And then really once we get into practice week, it'll just be nice to see that kind of ramp up to see where the manufacturers are at going into qualifying.
And Charlie, sorry, next week we strap down and really get ready for the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, and the iRacing Indy 500s are going to be, I think the fixed setup is next weekend, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. the open setup, the big race, is the weekend after that.
Oh, before we go, I forgot. I've got some talking points from storylines from Mid-Ohio. So, Eastern Pro 4 debuted. We saw I have the tweet here. It was a podium sweep for both races. Give me one second. It was... Oh, I've got to dig through. I always have, always find all my stuff. Okay. Okay, so Simon Sykes, Hayden Bowlesby, and Matt Clark all swept their podium classes. Now, you go into the F4 class. Hayden Bowlesby was the winner there. Christian Weir, second. And it's interesting, Tony, you pointed this out, and I kind of knew this, too, that Peter Dempsey's Turn 3 Motorsport team was the... team that was working on the F4 car, Jake Benilla also finished third.
Yeah, Peter's team, they're busy. They've yeah. grown by leaps and bounds, I feel like, in the last 2 to 3 years. So it's good to see just how active he's become and how committed he is to it. I mean, he kind of, you know, grew up, I think, at Junco's before kind of branching out on his own. And the Turn 3 program, I think they're solid USF team. I don't know where they're at in Indy Pro and then this other series you mentioned.
Well, they also, he also was on the D-Force team yes. for a while too. Here's another interesting fact about Turn 3 that I don't know if you know this, but, Newman, Brian Hallahan's actually on, he's helping Peter out with his, Road to Indy teams.
That's a good get right there.
Yeah, that's a real good get. So that's part of the storylines for this weekend of crew members going back and forth. Next round for Barber Motorsports Parks with HSR at the pole qualifying weekend. Charlie, you got to get down there. I swear to God, we've got to get down there.
I know. If it was, you know, my next race is going to be when they go to Pittsburgh.
That's right.
So that's going to be the race after Barber. And yeah, I mean, hopefully next year they go back and I'll be able to make it with them. It's, you know, like I said on one of our shows in the past, I raced at Barber back in 2004 when it was like brand new, and I haven't been back since. So I would absolutely love to go. So hopefully next year I'll be able to make it.
And Tony, you keep saying good things about Barber as well.
I do. Yes. It's been 2 or 3 years since I've been there. And I think just they recently had the repave, which changed the speed, made it even faster. But my goodness, I mean, they keep the place in tip top shape. The museum's awesome. Rusty's Barbecue's not far by. So there's a lot of good. That's usually one of my favorites. And if my timing had been a little different in between my South to Midwest return, I probably would have been there for the opening weekend.
So. There you go. All right, that does it for this week's edition of Inside Open Wheel. Coming up next week,
we preview, I should say, the NDGP as well as the big weekend for F4 and FR Americas over at Road America. So a busy week of racing, prepping for it. Next week, that's when we really start ramping up as well towards the month of May. So for Cameron Das, Stefan Wilson, Tony DeZino, and our driver analyst, Charlie Ante, I'm Jeremy Scott. We thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. Catch us on Facebook and Twitter. Also, find us on any of your favorite podcast services. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.